LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, January 8th. Community activist Glenn Gibellina is a frequent speaker at Manatee County Commission meetings and vice president of the Affordable Housing Advisory Board. Now he announced he will run against incumbent Mike Rahn to help advance a developer-skeptical agenda. Three seats are up on the Manatee County Commission this November. Rahn's, that of Amanda Ballard, who filed to run again, and Jason Bearden, who will not run again. Another candidate is Adam Johnson, better known as Lectern Guy. He was convicted for taking part in the January 6th riot and is now running for Bearden's seat. Manatee County added a bigger boat to its downtown Bradenton to Barrier Island ferry service. 2 years after starting the service, the county spent $2.8 million to buy the Manatee Bell, which can carry almost 100 passengers in a fully enclosed, air-conditioned environment. Ridership last year increased 82%. More transportation news. Avilo Airlines has been subject to a boycott and picketing here in Sarasota. Now the Texas-based airline announced it is ending its controversial deportation flights for ICE. The struggling budget airline also said it will be closing its bases at three airports while expanding to five others, including one in Florida. One of the bases it closes is at Mesa, Arizona, which it opened 9 months ago to operate the deportation flights. A spokeswoman said Avilo ended the government flights because they did not deliver consistent and predictable revenue. Meanwhile, Avilo will open a base in Lakeland, Florida. Flights to Sarasota are not affected. The governor yesterday called for a special session in April to redistrict Florida's congressional map. That's 1 month after the regular session ends. The controversial call was long awaited. Traditionally, states redistrict every 10 years following fresh U.S. Census data. But Donald Trump told Texas Republicans in July to redistrict mid-decade to secure the slim Republican majority in the U.S. House. Democratic California reacted with their own redistricting, followed by Democrats in Illinois, Virginia, and Maryland. Republican states Nebraska, Kansas, and Florida now are trying to follow suit. Ron DeSantis has also floated the possibility of another special session to take on property tax cuts. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, January 8th.
The following program has been pre-recorded. Please enjoy this special presentation.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2025-26 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. And the views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. I want to thank you all for joining me. With me today is school board member Liz Barker. And Liz has written an op-ed that was published in the Herald Tribune regarding Florida's voucher program and accountability issues. So, Liz Barker, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Kathy. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, happy new year. I just want listeners to know your there's so much going on in the world right now. We've had vouchers now in the state of Florida since like 2023 is when they were instituted. And there was an audit that came out recently conducted by the state, and which is really, it's kind of like a bomb should be going off in the Florida education world. And anybody who has, any politician who has ever made a claim that they're a fiscal conservative or they want financial accountability, and they're working in Florida government, this audit is a critical document. So, Liz, when did you see this audit, and how did it come to your attention? Is it sent to all the school board members? And, you know, you've unpacked quite a bit here, but let's just start there.
Sure. The audit actually came to my attention in mid-November. I tend to follow pretty closely what's going on with the state in terms of education, because it so directly impacts our work here at the local level. Mm-hmm. So I watched the Appropriations Committee meeting for pre-K-12 education in the Senate. I believe it was back on November 19th that they presented.
The Florida Senate.
The Florida Senate. They presented the results of this audit, and the meeting is published for anybody to watch, but it was absolutely jaw-dropping when they presented these results. And you could see sort of unanimously across that committee, senators were appalled by what they were hearing. This was an independent audit by the state, the type of audit that we undergo regularly in the public school world. And I think the timing of the presentation maybe made it a little bit harder for it to get more discussion around it in the broader public, because it was right before Thanksgiving and then we went into Christmas. But I really give credit to our Florida senators, because they heard that the results of that audit, and they were so concerned that they filed a bill later that week, I mean, within days, to make improvements to our taxpayer-funded voucher program to make it more transparent and fiscally responsible. So I give them a lot of credit for that. And what I want to see happen next is the House take up the mantle and do the same.
Yeah, so people listening, universal vouchers have been controversial in the state of Florida. These are basically a family, if they decide they want to homeschool, or if they decide, or let's say their kids are already going to, I'm going to say Cardinal Mooney. I sent my younger son to Cardinal Mooney. And these vouchers meant that, oh, instead of paying tuition for Cardinal Mooney, I can apply for this voucher and get $8,000 to put toward tuition for those already attending private school. Or I've also homeschooled my kids for 1 year. And let me tell you, I had, at that point, we were in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for 1 year. I had a 12-year-old and an 8-year-old. God knows what got into me, but I decided to homeschool them, which is really hard, okay?
It is.
If you decide, now, if this program had existed in Pennsylvania at that time, I could have gotten $8,000 a piece for my kids, which, you know, I bought the curriculum, we did on our own. So people can decide, okay, I want to homeschool my kids. I'm applying to this voucher program. And if you got two kids you're schooling, you're getting 16 grand. The bottom line is this audit showed horrendous lack of accountability. I mean, to the point where there were duplicate payments. So it's conceivable with two kids in this program, I'm not getting 16 grand, I'm getting $32,000. And the state has no real way of clawing that money back.
That's correct. We saw instances of private schools claiming students from 130 miles away, saying that they should be getting those voucher funds. We've talked about it multiple times, but we had hundreds of students in this last school year in Sarasota County Schools that were with us for the entire year who also received voucher funds. And that cost us millions of dollars. So in terms of waste, fraud, and abuse, we got a problem.
Let's stop for a minute. So that voucher funding, so when that child that's actually going to our public school is also getting voucher money, it's not like the school is getting a duplicate payment, right?
No, we get nothing.
Yeah. So somehow vouchers can be awarded twice. But when they are, and it's maybe, yeah, and when they're awarded, that public school isn't getting the money. So,
correct.
Okay. So everybody, this audit is 27 pages long, and I've read a lot of it, not all of it, and I've got I'll tell you, it's an investment of time. And Liz, already I'd like to have you back next month because I know I'm going to have more questions and there's going to be more to understand here. But the bottom line is when I look at this, one of the things that jumps out at me right away. So I'm just going to go through, first of all, unanticipated demand that the state legislature didn't anticipate the demand for vouchers, which I've got to say, are you kidding me? Because you're doling out $8,000 per kid and somehow you can't anticipate that that's going to be popular, that that's going to be ripe for fraud and abuse, that you are going to have some people double dipping. Hello, you're in government. Wake up. How could you not anticipate that? So that's one big question. The other thing is they're outsourcing the administration of the program. Okay. So they've got what's called scholarship funding organizations. So this audit, it's all under Manny Diaz. He's the responsible guy. The buck stops at Manny Diaz's desk. He's now a university president somewhere. I forget where all these guys are going to get their rich paydays. And people who follow me on Substack, there's an article I've written showing all these state legislators like Richard Corcoran, Manny Diaz. There's I think eight of them at least who've gone on to be the president of colleges where they can get like $200,000 or more. Of course, Richard Corcoran's getting $1 million. So at New College. So Manny Diaz was supposed to be watching the store here. That was his job. And there are two, what they call scholarship funding organizations, that were responsible for administering this program. When I think of this, to me, it's like Medicare and Medicare Advantage. You know, you've got the actual program with really low overhead that the government is in charge of that actually is quite cost effective. And then you've got Medicare Advantage programs where you're introducing another layer of bureaucracy. By the way, those people have stockholders like Aetna, Medicare Advantage, United Healthcare. So they're taking money out of the till. And that's a whole nother issue, but it just gives, I think, listeners some framework to understand what I'm talking about outsourcing this function. So there's two organizations that are approved to be the scholarship funding organizations. So it's like the private entities that are actually empowered to hand out this money. One is Step Up for Students-Florida, Inc. And I'm putting those qualifiers in there because there's a bunch of step up for students on SunBiz, register with the state. And then the other one is called AAA AAA Scholarship Foundation FL, LLC. Again, more than one AAA Scholarship Foundation on sunbiz.org. The acronym is SFO, Scholarship Funding Organization. I think it should be Voucher Funding Organization. I think they use the word scholarship because in people's minds, that implies merit, that implies need, when really the voucher is a voucher.
May I add something to that specific thought? From my perspective as a parent and in my world with other parents of school-age children, the term scholarship is very confusing for a lot of us. A lot of people don't understand that the money that comes is actually is taxpayer money. And so that's why I have moved to calling them taxpayer-funded vouchers. Because a scholarship, we think like, you know, maybe the Carnegies are funding it. Well, no, you and your neighbors are funding this. Right. And I think it gets really important for parents to understand because there are so many parents out there. I talk to them every single day and they're like, oh, this money just fell out of the clear blue sky. No, that's your money. That's my money. That's our money. So that's why I am really intentional about my language.
Yeah. And the state legislature is intentional too. They've packaged, you see, unanticipated demand and then the fraud that's happening and the waste and abuse that's happening. I'm going to return again to no, this was completely foreseeable. You legislators should have absolutely known the risks. This was Manny Diaz's job to prevent. If you're going to outsource programming, you better be sure it's actually cost effective to do it. Here, we're seeing it's not. In fact, it's making it much harder to track and hold have any kind of accountability about these funds. So I just want to run through. There's three voucher types which they call scholarships. One is an educational options voucher. One is unique abilities, which could be for gifted or special needs. And then one is through Florida corporations there's a way that Florida corporations can say, hey, instead of paying taxes to the state, we want to pay into this voucher program. And then they get 100% tax credit for the money that they're putting in the program. It's interesting. That's the one with the least money going out the door. Okay. But still a lot of money. But the educational options portion in 2021, before the legislature enacted universal vouchers, there were 80,000 students getting this voucher and at a cost of about $526 million. After universal vouchers were instated, the number of kids went up to 267,000 and more than $2 billion, okay, going out the door. These are taxpayer-funded vouchers. For the unique abilities, gifted and special needs, in 2021, 22, 27,000, that bumped up in 2024, 25 to 115,000. So it went up about five times. The cost in 2021, $248 million. Last year, the cost went up to $1.1 billion. The corporation piece, the Florida Tax Credit Corporation funded scholarship or voucher, 2021, it was 85,000 kids. This one went up the least. It was $114,000 in 2024, and the cost went from $568 million to $804 million. So it's really the taxpayer that's getting the shaft. I mean, the tax credit, corporation tax credit, is also going up quite a bit. But you've gone from about $775 million to well over $3 billion.
That's right. With
duplicate payments, with unverified students receiving this money. And it is shocking that an administration that claims to be all over, you know, financial accountability could be saying they didn't see this coming.
And I think another important piece of that puzzle to recognize is that 70%, roughly 70% across the state of students who are now receiving the voucher were already attending a private school or were already homeschooled.
So say that again. About 70%.
So what that means in reality is that students aren't fleeing public education in mass exodus. That's not what's actually happening. What's actually happening is that now as a state, we have decided to fund two streams of education. We are now funding both the public education families who remain in their public schools, and we are also now funding private education.
Yeah.
Correct. So, you know, if as a state that's valuable to us as taxpayers, if that's valuable to us to pay for all different kinds of education, okay, fine. Let's bring that argument to its conclusion. That's going to be very, very expensive. It is going to cost billions and billions of dollars, which is what we're seeing.
Yeah. So let's spend a little time on that too, because, you know, what there's the phrase I grew up on, which I think can be misapplied, but it certainly fits with these scenarios. What you subsidize, you get more of. Okay. And, you know, like I said, I have to be, I think it, subsidizing putting milk into babies is a good thing to do. You know, there's things that we need to do as a society, which are beneficial and make sense. However, what universal vouchers did was put, if you've got two kids and you put them in private school and the parents are making $250,000 a year, what universal vouchers did was that returned $16,000 into the pockets of families who are doing well and were paying for their kids' private education on their own.
Yes, I've heard it called welfare for the wealthy.
Yeah. So not only that, but when private schools realize, because let's not kid ourselves, a lot of times private schools, their mission isn't to educate every child necessarily, right? They often may have a religious mission, which is fine. That's their prerogative. And, you know, I'd say, do they want to provide a good education? Sure. I think we can assume that. But if they're not publishing their statistics, their test scores and all, that's a big red flag. And they're not held to the same standards about tests and services for special need kids, things like that. But if these schools realize, oh, now I've got way more applicants than we need, I can jack up tuition another $4,000. These parents are still going to be paying less, so they're not going to complain because they're getting $8,000. So let's split the difference. I get $4,000 more. You know, the private school is going to jack up tuition, and the parent is still realizing some savings. You know, you see what I'm saying?
And oh, yeah.
Economically, state legislature, if you don't have your head in the sand, you have to know this is going to happen. I mean, so there's a way that it's a tremendous waste of our money because we're financing systems that were making it on their own. They didn't need public money, but you've got people in the state legislature with an agenda to serve certain constituents and not look at the whole. So I'm wondering, is this resonating among school boards across the state? You know, what's the level of awareness, Liz, among your colleagues? And I realize you all have conventions. You probably haven't been able to meet with others, but what's the word on the street in your sector?
Yeah, actually, I'm fairly well connected at this point across the state with my colleagues, and there is. I will say this. Number one, there is widespread support, myself included, for school choice. We would like to see school choice be successful in the state of Florida. It's very popular with families, and it creates, if done correctly, it could create a better product for our students. So there's widespread support for school choice. There is also an understanding of the fiscal reality for public schools, that in our haste to create this school choice environment, we have not properly funded our public school districts, which continue to be the choice for the vast majority of families in Florida. And so I would say that if we're talking about school choice, the legislature has a responsibility to fund what most parents are choosing appropriately. If you'd also like to fund these private and homeschool options, fine. But that cannot be at the detriment to 80 to 90% of Florida's families who continue to choose their public schools. We must continue to appropriately fund those families as well.
Mm-hmm. So, I want to get back to homeschooling a little bit, because it is something I have some experience with, and I do understand why it can be an attractive choice for families. I think it is it's a big job. It was a big job when I did it. I don't know that I would do it again. I think my kids really did miss the social, you know, going to school. But we did get to do things like museums and programs that were good, you know. And I have a strong background in math and certain subjects like history, which I could draw on. As a parent, it was a lot of work. And I respect people's choices. However, and as a taxpayer and like wanting the greater good, you have to know that there are going to be some people who say, yeah, I'll homeschool my kid, but they're not equipped or they're not really committed. And that money is going to things like rent, you know. Because they need the money. So that's
well, Kathy,
one thing.
I was actually homeschooled until 10th grade, so I also have a pretty
really?
Extensive
okay.
yes, experience with homeschool.
Who schooled you?
My mother.
Oh,
my mother.
Wow.
Did.
God bless yeah. your mom.
Yes,
and how many kids did she?
Seven.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. And yeah. I was the oldest, and I pushed to be able to go to public school in 10th grade, and it was absolutely the best decision I've ever made, and it got me where I am today. So that is why I have become an advocate and really passionate about the value of public education being available for every student, a high-quality public education being available for every student. Should you choose to homeschool or go to private school, I absolutely respect that choice. And at the same time, I believe there should always be this option of a free and appropriate public education for every student in the United States.
So I want to ask you about 10th grade, okay? Because I 1 year of homeschooling with a gifted middle schooler when it, you know, so I was doing more high school math with him, and you know, gifted younger son, but it wasn't the high school level. We see, and Billy Townsend has done some great reporting on this, that test scores in Florida in third grade look great, and they may be being artificially propped up because parents whose kids aren't performing, it's like around third grade that there's a decision about whether or not to hold
retention.
And a lot of parents, rather than have their kid held back, because there's a lot of social consequences and self-esteem consequences, and it hasn't been proven to actually be effective. But they'll take their kid out of the public schools and put them in a voucher program. So you've got these, I think it's really fourth grade, you've got these fourth grade scores in Florida that are compared, like they compare to Massachusetts. They look great, but there's a question, are they being artificially inflated because the non-performing kids are being pulled out? Then parents are doing all this shuffling with their kids about school choice, well-intentioned.
Yep.
But 10th grade, the scores tank.
Correct.
Florida is the worst state in the nation when it comes to regression of scores by students. You know, we are like top in the nation at fourth grade, and then we slide like double digits. Like down into
the
30s.
And then we continue the slide in 10th. Yep.
It's horrible. So homeschooling can be okay, maybe, but high school subjects, you're really the separating, you know, men from the boys, so to speak. Like, you can't fake whether or not you know calculus, you know? And to ask a parent to do chemistry and calculus and all these higher level is, I think it's too much. That kids really benefit from a much more robust and high-powered curriculum in the later grades. Is that?
Yeah,
I mean, so, I know we're getting off the whole.
We're getting off topic a little, but that's okay. But I'll run with you. What I will say about that is, again, I'm not going to make that choice for a parent. That's their choice. In Sarasota County and many districts across the state, we are now registered providers with Step Up for Students. So if a family wanted to take, say, wanted to do homeschooling for most of their courses, but be able to come in and take a calculus course in our public schools, I believe that we are trying to make pathways for that, to have more flexible opportunities. Because listen, there are kids out there for whom maybe some sort of modified program like that is appropriate and useful. Yeah. And what we want as a public school district is to make sure that every student has the option to access excellent, high quality education. That's what we want. And the way that parents choose to access that is up to them, but it needs to be available for us to be a functioning, thriving community.
Yeah. So here's what, you know, the point that I was going to get at. My homeschooling experience in the state of Pennsylvania, my kids had to meet with a licensed educator, and then that person assessed whether or not they they got a good year of schooling and whether they could move forward. And I'm very confident they did. However, I was pretty shocked by the way the licensed educator was deciding that. And I thought to myself, well, it's not that hard. From what I saw, it's not that hard for something suboptimal to slide through, you know, in terms of being acceptable. You just got to get somebody licensed to sign off. At least that's how it was in Pennsylvania, that their school year was adequate. And the thing that really disturbs me about, you know, charters, corporate charter schools, there's no real evidence that their education is any better. In fact, there's evidence that it can be worse. Private schools that don't provide performance metrics, there's a lot of them out there. There's one private school that that one of the school board members is big into, and I look at what they publish. They're not publishing any, you know, college data, how many are going to college, test scores. And I know those metrics aren't perfect, but if you have nothing, you know, how do we know that it's one thing to know there's duplicate payments. It's one thing to know that they're fake students, right? That, okay. But for a real student who's using one of these alternate methods, shouldn't we have a way to really know whether they're actually being served and educated?
That speaks really to the accountability. And what I have said, and some of my colleagues across the state have said, is if you use state dollars, you should be held to state standards. That seems like a pretty basic expectation to me, because as taxpayers, we deserve to know if the billions of dollars that we are investing in a program, what is our return on that investment? What is our ROI? Taxpayers deserve to know that. And that's part of what I'd love to see the legislature implement in coming sessions. I think there is widespread support for better tracking, obviously, and better controls. But what I see as being the sticking point for a lot of folks is right now our voucher funding, those billions of dollars that you were talking about, is completely intertwined and enmeshed with the FEFP, which is our public school funding formula. So at this point, our voucher program is really shielded from any sort of public scrutiny on how those dollars are spent. There's no transparency there, because once you combine that pot of money with the public school dollars, what the audit found, what the auditor general found, was that you really cannot make a good
you can't tease it out.
And what I would say to that is that if we as Floridians, if we value school choice, and if we believe that our model of school choice is the best in the country, then it should be able to stand on its own. It should withstand public scrutiny. It should be out from under the skirts of public education. That should be a no-brainer. We should, as a community, that should be a shared common value. That if we're proud of this, we believe in it, it should stand on its own.
You know, there's absolutely true. And I think in a lot of people's minds, what you're describing is inconceivable. To me, it's like if you're accounting, you have different buckets. And you have a way to know that John Johnson is going to, you know, ABC school, and the ABC school is performing this way, and little Johnny is taking a test some kind of a test which shows where he's at, if he's improving. We have some idea of his curriculum. And, you know, folks listening, the reality is that doesn't exist at all. This voucher money, these, first of all, you're not even sure if it's really a student. Okay, number one. Then you may have double payments going for the same student or potentially the same fake student. Then you have no way of tracking if Johnny's homeschool experience or his private school experience or his online experience, whatever it is, you really don't have any way of tracking whether or not he's doing okay.
And Kathy, the main reason that that is a problem is because we have enmeshed the vouchers with our public school funding formula. So there's a very easy fix. Separate them out. As of today, what the Auditor General found is that the state was unable to account for roughly 30,000 students, which represents approximately $270 million taxpayer dollars on any given day. Let me say that again. In the state of Florida, on any given day, we are unable to account for $270 million taxpayer dollars because of the way that the funding is combined with, with, and it's not just a problem of, you know, basic administrative fixes like, and these are important too. Don't read me wrong. It is very important that we assign every student a student ID so that we can actually track where the money's going. It's very important that we have better controls in place, but it is equally, if not more important, that the actual structure of the program stand on its own in order to be accountable to the public that funds it.
So we can see if this, you know, all hail the great experiment with our kids as guinea pigs actually is functioning well. We should be able to measure whether or not it's serving kids. I want to get back to SFOs, what they call scholarship funding organizations, which I would call voucher funding organizations, just to make it really clear that this is public money. But SFOs, these funding organizations, there's two of them administering voucher money.
There are two, but really one administers the lion's share.
Which one?
The Step Up for Students.
Okay. All right.
The AAA is really a very minimal player right now.
Okay.
In the scheme of things, very minimal.
Okay. So if you've got, so the AAA, my understanding, you know, what I looked at before the interview is you only have one actual human that's associated with that organization. And so it may be minimal, but let's say it's $100 million. That's still a lot of money. And it needs to be managed in a transparent manner, in an effective manner. So people understand this. Manny Diaz outsourced the management of vouchers to these two SFOs, scholarship or voucher funding organizations. Step Up for Students is the one that's doing the lion's share. Step Up for Students has failed miserably when it comes to the, they call it funding following the child. Is there a mechanism to track the money and attach it to a child and follow it? And the bottom
line is, here's what the audit found. It didn't. The money did not follow the child. So we have to fix that.
Yeah, we have to fix that. And we have to tie it to performance. So it's not enough. Yes, we need to be able to track the money, but we also need to be able to track the performance.
$8 for state standards.
Yeah. And if you're going to outsource to the private sector, because this whole, like, you know, bowing at the altar of the private sector, that's not always the most effective thing to do in government. A lot of times keeping something in-house in the public sector is more cost effective, and I point to Medicare as one example of a public sector program that runs circles around the private sector. In fact, private sector health insurance follows the standards set by Medicare. So if you've got an SFO, that Step Up for Students, that is failing this miserably, one of the things the legislature has to look at is, do we fire them? Can we just fire them and bring it all in-house? And then, you know, listeners, this is where you get into who's making money here, right? How is this money really being handled? Why is it better to outsource the administration of a program when they're clearly failing miserably? How does the legislature not anticipate demand when it's so obvious there are clear temptations to game the system? And that's where, you know, it's time for our state senators, Fiona McFarland, Joe Gruters, Will Robinson, Tommy Gregory. Well, Tommy Gregory is now a university president, State College of Florida. Getting back to my prior point, but James Buchanan, this is their problem to fix.
Yes, and what I would love to see is we have a lot of strong fiscal conservatives in our local delegation, and again, as I said, the Senate has already proposed a bill, SB 318, that does an excellent job of solving a lot of those problems. I would like to see more accountability in the bill. I don't see that yet. But listen, it absolutely puts the public education funding formula as returning to standing on its own. It puts the voucher funding in its own separate silo so that people can actually see what's going on with that, which is excellent. It does a great job of coming up with tracking mechanisms and protections to guard our taxpayer dollars. But I have not seen, that's on the Senate side. I have not seen on the House side yet, our folks match that level of integrity and fiscal responsibility. And I would love to see Sarasota be a leader in that. I would love to see our local delegation say, you know, we value school choice. We want to see school choice be successful. It will not be successful if we continue down this path. The Auditor General said everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. So it's going to take some courage and some bravery to say, you know, we want this to work. Let's make it work. So that's my hope is that we will see some of our local folks who are fiscally conservative. They're concerned about education. They care about our kids. I want to see them step up and lead the charge.
Yeah. Yeah. So the good news about SB 318 from what you're sharing is it does do one of the major things that you're looking for, which is to separate the public school funding from the voucher funding.
Correct.
We've got to start there to actually know if vouchers are working. And you know, Liz, in the state of Texas, vouchers come up from time to time, and it's the conservatives, and often there's a Christian conservative element that has been successful in saying, look, this whole voucher thing is fraught with problems. And they have not, in Texas, a state very similar to the politics of Florida, for religious reasons, for financial reasons, they have refused to adopt vouchers. And Florida's basically demonstrating the validity of the argument in Texas against them, why they keep rejecting them. So it's time for us to get our house in order when it comes to these vouchers. So you're saying that the Senate is on board, but the House is, are they like playing stupid here? Like, you know, are they just ignoring it? Why are you concerned that the House is not on board?
Well, I haven't heard a lot from the House, but what I am hearing is that they are on board with better tracking, potentially. But some of what I've heard from some folks in the House, not our local delegation, but some folks in the pre-K-12 committees and such, they're concerned that if you separate out the money, which I strongly believe needs to happen, that then that could potentially lead to some instability in the voucher funding. And because when we see how many billions of dollars are being siphoned out, then perhaps that may concern people.
So they're concerned.
We should always, if we are going to spend taxpayer money, we should be very concerned about what our return on investment is. We should be able to see where those dollars go, and we should be making a better product for students. That at the end of the day, you know, regardless of our political affiliations or anything else, this is a shared common value. We should get a return on our investment.
Yeah,
and we should create a better product.
It definitely should be. And, you know, there is a business. Listen, education is a business, and there is a business. There are people profiting now from the universal voucher program. And if the House, if the state legislature is actually working for the public, for the greater good, for excellent education, they cannot be shrinking from putting accountability structures in place so that we can evaluate whether vouchers are working. Because it sounds to me like there are politicians out there who would rather keep the public in the dark so they can keep a gravy train going, perhaps for certain interests who have donated to their PACs or their campaigns, who are profiting from the business of education around vouchers. We need to have accountability with our state legislature. I encourage everybody to go to your op-ed that was published in the Herald Tribune. There's a link in that op-ed to the audit from the state. It's 27 pages long. There's stuff we didn't get to hear, Liz, talking about the structure of surveys and calculations and financial decisions of the legislature that are not lined up in a way that the state can make smart decisions. They've done this to themselves. So the structure of the program needs to change. And call your state representative. Let's keep track of this issue. If people want to find out more, Liz, where do you suggest that they go?
Yes, my op-ed is a great start, but also there's a lot of information around the state now about the results of this audit. So you can do that. You can go to the Florida Department of Education. You can go to the house.gov and see any of the, I mean, listen, if you have a couple hours on your hands and you really want to dig deep, those committee meetings are fascinating watching.
So, okay. And which was the committee meeting that you watched? It was appropriations.
Yes, it was the
November 19th.
Florida Senate Appropriations Committee on Pre-K-12 Education.
Okay.
It was Wednesday, November 19th.
Okay, I've got must-see TV.
Must-see TV.
Florida Appropriations Committee. Watch the report. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. I want to thank you, Liz Barker, for being my guest. You can always watch Liz and her colleagues on the Sarasota County YouTube channel when they're having their meetings. And if you're a nerd like many of us, you'll watch them in your spare time, if you know what's going on. That's right. They can be very entertaining. Exactly. Be sure to stay tuned here for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
Talk of the Town, a WSLR News Roundtable, airs Saturdays from 11 to noon on WSLR. Talk of the Town is a panel discussion radio program featuring politicians, activists, academics, policy analysts, and investigative journalists. They will join me, Carrie Seidman, for a deep dive into the local issues of the day. It's an hour of analysis and debate with a dash of humor and snark. Learn more about Talk of the Town at WSLR.org and tune in Saturdays at 11 a.m.
This Martin Luther King Jr. Day, WSLR Plus Fogartyville is proud to sponsor the 2026 MLK Unity Walk in Sarasota. The walk takes place Monday, January 19th at the Robert L. Taylor Community Complex. Check-in begins at 10:30 a.m. and the walk steps off at 11. WSLR is forming a station group to participate, and community members, volunteers, programmers, and listeners are welcome to join us. The Unity Walk is part of a three-day celebration supporting scholarships for college-bound youth and honoring Dr. King's legacy through education, service, and community. More information can be found at WSLR.org.
Save the date for the third annual Rooted in Community, a special evening in support of independent media on Saturday, February 28th at Fogartyville. Proceeds go to support the Beat Goes On Founders Fund, ensuring long-term sustainability for WSLR and Fogartyville. Tickets will go on sale soon. If you or your organization are interested in sponsorship opportunities, please email Executive Director Jesse Coleman at jesse@wslr.org, or you can call 941-894-6469.
Thank you. Democracy Now!, you're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP.